Welcome to the Elevate Podcast. My name is Rahul Ravipudi.
And I'm Ben Gideon.
Ben, how are you today?
Doing great, Rahul, and I'm really excited for our guest today, Seth Price. Have you heard of Seth, or do you know him at all?
I don't know him at all, but I'm really interested in learning about everything he specializes in. I'm going to tell you, even though we've started to grow into a larger firm, digital marketing and those types of marketing efforts are still new experiences for us and things that we're trying to get really better at. I don't know how it's working for you at your new firm.
I have an interesting background in this because I left a firm that was a pretty good sized shop. We had 17 lawyers and we were big enough to afford a full-time marketing director. So I was able to rely a lot on staff to do the heavy lifting with respect to the marketing. The listeners may not know this, but I left that firm in January of 2021 to start my own firm. And when we started, it was just me and one other lawyer partner, and we had one staff person. And we're 6 months later, we now have seven people. So we're growing rapidly, but a part of starting a new firm was figuring out the marketing side. So as part of that, I spent a lot of time reading books, listening to podcasts, and that's actually how I came across Seth Price, because if you listen to podcasts on lawyer marketing, he's kind of a fixture in that universe. And he was one of the ones that to me seemed the most knowledgeable. So I reached out to him and developed a little bit of a relationship, and he was very generous with his time and was able to mentor me through some of the early phases of that. So I think he'll be a great resource for people to learn more about digital marketing for lawyers. And I guess I was going to ask you guys, so I mean, I know Panache and Boyle, you guys do have a marketing staff person, and so you're kind of certainly not where I am. Much more established. How do you get most of your cases, Raul? Do they come as referrals or do they come direct from marketing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ben. And just one clarification, we actually don't have a full-time marketing person in our office at the moment, and actually never have. And that's part of the evolution of the firm, is we're contemplating hiring somebody like that right now. But so really the learning curve is all going through the lawyers and the partners, with each of us trying to understand the various aspects and trying to be knowledgeable about it, but probably just being dangerous. And as a result, really 90% of our cases come in through attorney referrals, and a little bit comes in through our website and other types of efforts that are being done.
Yeah, we're the same. Almost all of our cases come from referrals, but one of the things we would like to do better at is getting more direct from consumer cases, because obviously you don't pay out as much in referral fees, but also there's a freedom in not having to rely on specific attorney referral sources, because that can be fickle. People can change their minds, and over time, if you can get cases directly, you have a little bit more market power. So it'll be interesting to hear more about that from Seth. He's been very successful in that universe, so hopefully he can share some of his wisdom with us. Today's episode of the Elevate Podcast is being brought to you by our friends at the Expert Institute. Expert Institute is a company that assists trial lawyers in finding the right experts for your case, and in helping you prepare your case for settlement or for trial. The way they do that is in a number of services that they offer. One is that if you need an expert in a case, a specific expert from a particular specialty or geographic location, they will go out and perform a search for that expert, and a unique search for every case for each expert. So you're not using the same tired old experts who testify in case after case. They're actually going out and finding new people to serve as experts in your case. They've found me some really great experts in areas that are often really hard for me to find on my own, places where I've struck out in the past and found experts that didn't perform well, areas such as orthopedic surgery, neurointensive care. I even had them find me an expert in a case involving security at a convenience store. So they can locate experts in all different types of cases, whether it's personal injury, product liability, medical malpractice. The other great part about Expert Institute is if you're looking for an expert in a case, they'll often give you several options so that you can meet and interview multiple possible experts and choose the best one. So you're not just backed into using the whatever expert is most convenient or just happens to be available. It's actually a robust process where you're finding the best person for the job. And that adds significant value in cases. So if you're interested in working with Expert Institute, I would encourage you to give them a call or check them out online. If you search for them at expertinstitute.com/elevate, you can get a 25% off discount on your first expert consultation. Our show today is also brought to you by Smart Advocate. Smart Advocate is a case management system. I wanted to say software, but it's really more than software these days because they offer a full cloud-based integration, so you don't really need software. It's all available for you. Everything is stored and processed through the cloud. They have a server-based application as well, but it seems like more and more folks are moving more toward cloud-based programs, which is the way we use it. It's a fantastic program to the point where I was meeting with one of my paralegals the other day, and she exclaimed, "Ben, the best decision you made since opening this new law firm was getting Smart Advocate. It's awesome." And it's really great to hear that from my staff and the people who have to do the really hard work of managing a volume of cases, intakes, and discovery all the way up through trial. So we've had a great result with Trial Advocate. It's a very powerful and robust program. I know it's used by firms that do multi-district litigation and class action and literally have tens of thousands of clients all the way down to smaller PI firms. It can be customized for each particular application. In our case, where we do a lot of medical malpractice cases and have very record and document intensive cases, it's also worked well for that. We can text and email our clients right through the interface. It automatically saves all of that correspondence so we can see what's happening, and it's really worked well for us. So I encourage you to contact Smart Advocate if you're looking for case management software and check it out. Our show today is also sponsored by our friends at Hype Legal. Hype Legal is a full-service digital marketing firm for trial lawyers. Micah and Tyler at Hype Legal had worked at High Impact, which is a trial animation and graphics firm, for a collective 20-plus years. So they're very familiar with trial lawyers and what we do. And now they're taking the skill set that they developed there in high-end graphics and aesthetics and putting that to use for legal marketing. If you go to their website at hypelegal.com, you can check out a number of law firm websites and digital marketing campaigns that they've created, including the graphics and the website for our podcast, which is really terrific. So I encourage you to check out hypelegal.com.
This is the Elevate Podcast, where trial lawyers learn, share, and grow. Let's talk about how we can elevate our trial practices, law firms, and lives. And now, here are your hosts, coming to you from coast to coast, trial lawyers Ben Gideon and Rahul Ravipudi.
So I'd like to welcome to the show Seth Price. Seth, welcome. Where are you today?
I am in Bethesda, Maryland, right outside Washington, D.C.
So Seth, for the listeners who don't know him, is the founding partner and managing partner of Price Benowitz, which is a 40-plus lawyer firm based in Maryland, D.C. and Virginia, which Seth built really from the ground up. Seth is also the owner and manager of a digital marketing firm that specializes in marketing lawyers. Seth, can you just tell us a little bit about your backstory and what brought you to this point of managing a really large, successful law firm and marketing company?
Sure. You know, when you first hear that, it sounds like they're very incongruous, but it actually makes a lot of sense. So after leaving big law, I went to make my fortune during the first dot-com bubble in the late 90s in New York. And ironically, was a founding employee of something called uslaw.com, way ahead of its time. sort of before Avvo, before LegalZoom and all of those. And watching LegalZoom go IPO, it's kind of interesting because that was the model that was there.
Is that U.S. law still a thing? Is that still around now?
U.S. law blew up in that basically in April of 2000, the bubble burst, and by January 2001, nothing was left except, you know, Amazon had gone public. It went from $100 to $6 a share. It survived. Yahoo survived. Google was in its very infancy. So a lot of people got wiped out. Just the valuations were high and the market corrected dramatically. I went and, you know, I thought I was going to start a business. And my buddy from college and law school, Dave Benowitz, really wanted to practice law. He's a lawyer's lawyer, like you guys. And he really wanted to practice. So I said, okay, let's divide and conquer. I'll be the marketing management guy and you be the chief legal officer. And it's the guy who'd rather be in the courtroom than anything else. So, you know, built a website, add another lawyer, built another website, add another lawyer. And decade later, we had about 40 lawyers and a whole family of websites. The thing that sort of I noticed about my journey, and I think you guys could probably appreciate this with your internal resources, that whenever you have an internal marketing person who gets decent, you know, they either get really expensive or they leave or both. And I every 2 years, I would like wash, rinse, repeat. I would like train somebody up. They give them nice raises and they would go off and do something else, not competitive, just, you know, they'd go off in DC to foreign service or government contracts or something. One guy became a sports agent and I got fed up with that. So Blue Shark was born sort of as a sustainability model where I could take my amazing team that I had and give them opportunities so they wouldn't leave and I would have a stable environment for Price Benowitz. And, you know, client by client, now up to almost 200 clients, we now have a family of law firms that almost as a cooperative. It allows me to keep top talent who leverage and sort of scale and pyramid, you know, people to do the work, but being run by really amazing homegrown talent from within. And that's sort of the Blue Shark story.
Just to start out, I'm, you know, our podcast listeners are mostly trial lawyers who spend a lot of time thinking about things like cross-examining witnesses, opening and closing arguments, how to settle and try verdicts, cases to verdict, probably don't spend as much time thinking about how to market their own law firms. Can you give us sort of a big picture view of right now, kind of where is the energy and the value in marketing for lawyers? We know about the history of TV ads and billboards. Now we've got digital, but where do you see things going right now, big picture wise?
Well, look, my world is digital, and there are a lot of ways to make a buck in life. And what I focus on is the business to consumer legal world. So you guys as plaintiffs lawyers squarely in that sort of the top of the business to consumer world. There's criminal, there's family, there's trust and estates, immigration, bankruptcy, anything touching a person. And we were talking just before we went on air, Raul, about your partner's buddy, John Morgan. And he always made the analogy that we aren't really lawyers, we're plumbers. And that when the hot water heater in your basement explodes and your significant other is yelling at you, the first person who can, you know, solve your problem at a reasonable price and get the business, that's how I built my firm. Now, there are a lot of ways to do it. I mean, both you guys have, you know, awesome reputations. And, in California, for example, that is a brand that I was aware of before we even went on this podcast. Like, that is a awesome, legendary brand. And you're going to get other lawyers referring in cases as you get verdicts. So there are a lot of ways to market, meaning if you do a kick-ass job and you speak publicly and you get known, all of a sudden, you know, work comes to you. Now there's usually a referral fee attached, but there's no upfront costs. And I think that for everybody, the question is, what is their mix? So I focus on digital, whether it be paid, organic, local, those are the three historic, and now LSAs. The local service ads have been the big topic in California. You can't even get them anymore. You know, they're so popular, nobody goes there. As Yogi Berra would say, like you can't spend enough money there's not enough inventory to get what you want.
Can you explain to people what LSAs are for those who don't know?
Local service ads are something that came into existence second quarter 2020. They started in the home improvement space, and Google brought them over to the legal space. And it's essentially a pay-per-lead model instead of pay-per-click. Normally, Google Ads, you're paying for clicks that are very, very expensive. California, they could be, you know, $1, $1.50 or more for a single click. Instead, they were selling calls that started at $100, $200. California might be $400. It's still a bargain compared to third parties that sell you calls. 30 seconds, you have to listen to the call, decide if it's for you. You can challenge if it wasn't a PI call. It's a very desirous product for plaintiff's lawyers particularly. There have been some issues in the fee-for-service areas where they don't convert necessarily as well. But here, it was really a gift, almost like a drug dealer giving out free samples to get you hooked. And it worked because, you know, there is so much demand that exceeds the potential number of callers. We did a case study that showed that really most of what that did was cannibalize the other pay-per-click. There's the three pack where there are in the map pack, so to speak, where which is organic, where you get reviews. This looks similar, but it's above the ads, and it puts a picture, number of years in business, reviews, all of that there as a conversion factor, but it clicks directly to a call. That has sort of been the big market differentiator. But looking at somebody, two different markets, right? We got Maine, we got California here, tale of two cities. California is so hyper competitive. So in one sense, you know, I'm sure you wish, hey, we wish we had a bigger digital footprint. Great. But you have a brand that's so, so dramatic. The thing that's interesting, and Ben, you and I talked about this for a while offline, particularly as somebody who's starting an enterprise, you got to be careful what you ask for. That's my philosophical thing. Because look at trial lawyers, right? Trial lawyers, every trial lawyer, right? Oh, I know you and a bunch of other people of your ilk, meaning amazing trial lawyers in the panacea that is California, all want the mega cases. You want the $10 million cases, and you're fortunate enough that you get a lot of them sent to you. It's very hard to go online and say, hey, I only want the $10 million cases, because the same guy who has a trip and fall says, oh, these guys look really good, I want them. And all of a sudden your phones are dry, you know, filled up with calls that you're potentially not even set up to handle. And that's always the thing that I sit down and talk to people, because I look at clients for Blue Shark as partners. And first, if something doesn't make sense, it's not going to work and nobody's going to be happy. So the first thing I say to somebody is, are you really, you know, if somebody who is used to doing $5, $10, $15 million cases says, I want to advertise online, I'm like, okay, well, you're going to be getting calls for people that have $5,000 cases. And if you're not set up to deal with it, several things happen. First, you're not going to find the diamonds in the rough when they do call. But second, you're not going to cash flow the actual marketing that you're doing, because it's a pyramid. You're going to get a lot of lower dollar cases, some middle, and a few very high dollar cases. It's not like you can just say, hey, I only want the high dollar and that's going to come. So I think it's the mentality. And going back to what I talked about before, that we are plumbers, not lawyers, that if you have the mentality, I know that if I was referring a case to your firm, I would wait 48 to 72 hours to hear back, because I know that if you took that case, I would have a partner, co-counsel, that would do an amazing job, right? And so you have a little bit of leeway there. But if this was a situation where somebody's calling and they're like, I don't know who this Raul Panish is, like, you know, I don't know these names, they seem nice enough, but like, if I can't find them, I'm going to the next guy down the list. And so if you don't change the mentality of instant gratification with intake and lawyers that are set up to grab those cases, it's definitely not going to work well, and you're going to be disappointed and not get ROI, which is why I sort of say, to begin with, you have to be careful what you ask for, because while, you know, you, and again, you know, you're going to get the referrals, the question is, are you really positioning yourself and your staff? Because if the staff is used to this sort of, hey, we're the biggest, baddest guys, they'll wait for us to get back to them, it's not going to transition well if you're sitting there and you know, have these cases. And the next piece is, are you going to monetize the stuff that's below your pay grade? So if you spend a ton of money in California, very competitive, Maine a little bit less so, to get the phone to ring, you really need to make sure that those cases, even the ones you're not taking, are going out. And the business model could be very synergistic. Get this to a family of people who love those smaller cases and frankly are going to co-counsel with you on the bigger cases. But if that's not set up, if you're not positioned to capture that and send it out, and hopefully make a minor buck on it so that you can cash flow that, you're never going to get to the point where you get those 18-wheeler cases that you really want.
So looking at the different types of firms that are out there that you've worked with and had experience sort of evaluating, what are the different types of digital strategies that you think are effective, whether it's a small firm, whether it's a heavy desiring advertising firm, whether it's a group of just trial lawyers? Like, what are the different approaches, assuming you've got the infrastructure built out?
So there are two different, let's bifurcate this, right? There's paid search, where you put your money down and the cases come and you figure out, hey, you know, it's going to cost me $1,500, $2,000, $2,500. You do your math backwards and you figure out, am I willing to pay this for a case? Again, same issue. If you're not taking the lower dollar cases, your cost per case goes way up. Now, I know if you're used to mega cases, that may be fine, but it gets a bit scary. And a lot of people get squeamish and say, you know what, I'll just go back to the referral game. On the organic side, it's all about authority. Can you build authority to your site through content and links, two of the main factors of organic SEO, in order to build the gravitas so that the Google algorithm shows your site above others? And Google is trying to find, I mean, both of you guys are awesome trial lawyer firms. You know, Ben, your firm is much newer. So you're going to have to sort of demonstrate to Google, to the bot, hey, I am a legitimate player. Well, you guys have verdicts and links, all these things coming in. That means that if somebody harnesses the power of that, Google's looking for you. They want to send somebody to your firm. The question is, can they figure that out? And is some kid in his basement being able to say, no, I have better links and content? Google is getting better and better and cutting through the bullshit, but you still need to be able to demonstrate through link equity, through content, what's there. Pivoting back to your question, I think that particularly in a crowded market, the question is, can you become a content authority the way you know, online, the way that you are offline? You know, I knew of your firm before coming to this podcast. How can you show that authority to Google in content, whether it be words, whether it be video, demonstrating so that when the Google bot reads it, it can't know of you in the universe. The only thing it can do is understand the content on the page that it's very good at doing and say, hey, these people are pointing in. So if the Los Angeles Times is pointing at you with links demonstrating some sort of trust or authority, that's going to move you up. And similarly for Ben, you're in a smaller fishbowl, but if you're able to demonstrate your authority from people pointing at you, almost votes of confidence, saying, hey, this guy is the real deal, that's what the Google bot is looking for, and that's what will differentiate you. I think the frustrating thing, and I talk to a lot of trial lawyers in California, is that there are, you know, a number of very, very good trial lawyers there. And there's this debate, I think, internally, sort of, we're all frenetic. You want it, like, I want everything. I want the referrals and I want the marketing. But you realize it's not, there's not just the ability to get the visibility, but can you somehow sculpt it so that not only are you being seen for an auto tort, but can you be seen as the guy who differentiates yourself from others? I think the consumer comes in two forms, being very simplistic, right? There are people that are just going to click on the first ad or the first website they come to, and it's harder to differentiate the two of you guys from the market for those people, because the kid in his basement, in his, you know, in his parents' house, theoretically, if it's a nice shiny site with some clip art and some pictures of people that look like they can take care of the case, can accomplish a lot. What you have is the goods. And so that if somebody is reading about who each of you guys are and they are digging deeper, you can differentiate yourself. And the more you can niche into topics that the average kid in his basement is like, I just want the auto cases. And you could be explaining how the traumatic brain injury is something that you guys are expert at, and that you have experience taking cases that are difficult and proving to a jury that they're worth great sums of money. I think that is the SEO at the highest level, is when you combine the substance. That's personally my own journey. Like, when I saw my partner is like a lawyer's lawyer. He teaches up at Harvard Law for like a week a year in their trial skills program. You know, he got an LLM in trial advocacy. He loves this stuff. If I can differentiate us from our competitors in some meaningful way. When we started, it was mostly really schlocky firms. And over time, a lot of the really good firms have started to compete. But at the same time, the more you can demonstrate through content and links that you are a superior product, that to me is the game as it stands today.
Can you talk about it on the organic search, which I think you're talking about demonstrating your stature through links and content that can place you high in the map pack where you see an area, maybe it's the big city and the top firms or restaurants, whatever you happen to look for. And then there's also what we had thought of in the old days as organic search, just the results that come below the paid ads and the map. But what I've noticed, and I don't know how this affects digital marketing, is there's so many ads now, and then you have the map, that by the time you get to organic search, it's way down there. And also, it's hard to distinguish now, I feel like it is for me anyway, between the organic results and the ads. How does that play into all this?
You're not wrong. The ads are dominant, and Google wants its money. And the map pack has taken on, the organic map pack has taken on a greater significance because it's the first thing that you see and it takes up so much real estate. So yes, very significant, very important place to be for picking up meaningful traffic. Everything I'm talking about, let's work backwards, is the fundamentals of organic. And as you're saying, in some situations where you do have LSAs, paid ads, map pack, and then the organic is harder to get to. You have to really be pushing and researching to get there so that the map pack becomes that much more important. The algorithm to get in the map pack is partially the organic algorithm of those content and links and all the things that would get you into the organic, but there's more in the interface with the Google My Business, the GMB, including reviews. So whereas reviews used to be a conversion factor, it more and more seems that that is becoming an actual ranking factor, the name of your firm, proximity. So it used to be that a juggernaut in a city could own a city. That isn't really viable anymore, or is not as easy as it could be. And that Google is trying to say, just like a pizza place, you don't really want a place across town. You know, if West Hollywood is 40 miles from you, that's not going to do you a lot of good for a pizza delivery place. For a lawyer, you really would go further, but Google is not allowing you to own a city anymore, or it is up forcing you to have locations closer to the people you want. We had a case study that we did in St. Louis with an immigration shop. Their firm was 20 miles out of the city center. And this is a nationally known group. They do great work and they would own their area, but they couldn't break into downtown. They could break into downtown for words other than immigration lawyer, like visa or words dealing with immigration, but not immigration itself. Because if somebody had an office downtown, it would trump. We put an office downtown, and within weeks, that authority that they had built for the website correlated to the downtown office. And all of a sudden, we got the traffic from there. And so we were, what you're trying to figure out is a combination of the organic authority, content, and links, which, as you demonstrate, has relevance, but there's a lot of traffic in that map pack, and then leveraging that authority to then put pins on the map, as I say, Google My Business locations, in places that takes the authority of the website and then puts that a location in play. And that's the 1-2 punch that is ideal and really generates the most traffic, calls, and revenue.
So that sounds like there's certain rules that Google establishes as to how to utilize your authority. Do those rules change, or have they changed over time, and will they change?
Great question. Google is constantly evolving. What I would say is that if you look at it as Google's trying to show a good user experience, that and they want to make a buck. But staying in the good user experience for a second, if you follow the idea of giving a good user experience, generally, as the algorithm updates, it has benefited you. So early on, if you had cheap overseas links that were spammy, that were manipulating the algorithm, Google figured out how to basically get those out of play. So if you continue to get high quality content and authoritative links, to date, those things have stayed tried and true and have continued in the right positive direction. They're not easy. They're not inexpensive to do. It is a costly process. But if you, in general, the algorithm for the most part has been tripping up people that have taken shortcuts where you're trying to save a buck. And again, I applaud people who are trying to find a way to do this in a cost-effective way, because we're not doing it for our health. We're doing it for ROI, to make a buck. But if you follow best practices over time, while Google continues to change and update, most of the things that if you continue to do best practices, you don't, I haven't woken up recently and said, oh my God, the algorithm changed and everything's screwed. It really has been a progressive, positive change. And that, you know, having sort of studied this and focused on it, I usually welcome these updates. They're scary, but once the dust has settled, it has been a positive. And look, I would argue it's not dissimilar. You know, you go up against people that take shortcuts in court, and there are times when those shortcuts pay off for them. And they, but over time, if you do things right, and I say right, following Google's rules, they have continued to update the algorithm, in my experience, to reward that work. And for the most part, that has continued. So to you, flip to what you got, who you guys are, you have an entirely, you have a huge brand offline. Google is looking for you. And the question is, can they find you? And that is the constant sort of, you know, they are saying, hey, who has the most authority? Let us find them. And the question is, are you doing what is necessary to sort of show them it's there?
Seth, I know you don't hold yourself out as an expert in television or radio or billboards, but are you, do you have any data, and are you seeing any trends that where consumers are going for their hiring decisions relating to lawyers? Is it moving away more from those, I guess, older generation media to digital media, or is it now just more of a dispersed messaging, but everything's important? Or how do you look at that?
A lot of people make a lot of money with TV. So I, you know, people made a lot more money than I have with TV. So there's clear that TV is part of the game. What I could tell you is the cost per lead has gone up significantly. And that we are seeing people shift money from TV to digital, A. B, you know, I can speak for my kids. I don't know if you guys have seen, I assume you guys have seen the same thing. My kids don't watch broadcast TV. They're on YouTube. That's their place. And while there's now ability to advertise there, and if, for example, when a Morgan entered our market and pushed crazy, my kids knew who he was because of that push. They don't know any of the local TV advertisers in our market the way they would have a generation ago, where that was part of, you know, if you were homesick from school, you'd be watching, you know, The Price is Right, and you would get the local injury lawyers. That to me has disappeared. And so I think that as those eyeballs are disappearing, that people are looking for it. So no, there's OTT. There's plenty of places to place video media. I think that the idea that you could just go and you had a handful of local stations and then cable, and that was your one-stop shop to doing it, that the cost per case has gone up. I would not say, I think that just like some people say SEO is dead, TV is not dead, but I think that it is no longer the one place that you would go to place your fortunes and be set. But I, you know, again, we all know plenty of people that have done very, very well with TV. I just, you know, I know that there are different ways to do it, and I'm watching the money coming into the market. And, it, you know, that's the part that throws things off. There's no more competitive market than yours. And that is one of the things I've seen, is that where the cost per case, if you came to me and said, hey, I want to do pay-per-click, I'm like, that's not for the faint of heart. You know, and that's why I talked about monetizing lower dollar cases, because you may be paying, I'm making this up, but $2,500 or more from Google pay-per-click. And that while you're looking for a case that's three or four steps up the food chain, if you can't monetize those, all of a sudden, if it's one out of 10 and it's $2,500 per case, you're $25,000 before that you're just throwing away because you're not monetizing those lower dollar cases. So, you know, billboard's a whole nother conversation. Very few people have cracked that code. You know, a few have. Even some of the people that have cracked it are always like, you know, ripping their hair out. So I think that the truth is there's no easy buck. It's tests as best as you can track, but it's getting harder because, as you talked about, with TV, digital ads, you know, pay-per-click SEO billboards, very often people's journey to hiring is not that sort of direct line that it once was. You know, if you're planning a family vacation and you're looking at a cruise, not that we're necessarily doing a cruise this season, but when you in the past were looking at a cruise, you didn't just go click on Royal Caribbean or Disney and book the cruise. You know, you might look at the website, you saw a TV ad that inspired you to do that. You spoke to your friend, you checked reviews, you went back and forth. And on that 10th touch point, you actually booked the cruise. I think the lawyer buying cycle, particularly for the higher dollar cases, is becoming more like that. And that, you know, people are trying to get those multiple touch points and trust points along the way.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in about 60 seconds with more of Seth Price. During our quick break, I want to remind you that our show today is being sponsored by Smart Advocate. Smart Advocate is a case management program designed for trial law and personal injury law firms, all the way from smaller PI firms to the largest MDL and class action firms. It's the case management software we use at our office, and we love it. Our show also is sponsored by Hype Legal. Hype Legal is a full-service digital marketing firm started by friends of the pod, Tyler and Micah, who have years of experience helping trial lawyers getting great results in their cases, and now they're turning that attention to digital marketing. So check them out at hypelegal.com. Our show today is sponsored by Expert Institute. Expert Institute is the ultimate partner for helping trial lawyers pair with the right experts for their cases and working their cases up all the way from intake through verdict. So check them out at expertinstitute.com/elevate, ELAWVATE, and you will receive a 25% off discount on your first expert consult.
Okay, welcome back. Seth, if you're a new lawyer or somebody who's getting into the marketing space, you don't have the track record and you're just trying to get a wide reach, what are the sort of messages or the up-to-date or current messages that seem to actually attract consumers? I've seen everything, and some are offensive and some are not.
Right. And I think the answer is be different. You know, but that's so hard. You know, like, none of us want to be the Me Too injury lawyer. It is just a hard, hard thing to differentiate yourself from the market. I'll answer the question that was from my point of view. Like, the actual messaging is something that I'll leave up to the lawyer, because it's opinion, it what resonates, and history is written by the victor. My question is, how do I deliver that message? And I'll give you sort of some of my metrics that I look at, which is, you know, for me, I would say, and again, every market is different. You're from two dramatically different markets here. I always ask people if they're over or below $350,000 in gross revenue, because until they're over $350,000 in gross revenue, it's really hard to invest, assuming that you don't have an independent line of equity coming in to pay for this, that it's very hard to put meaningful money into SEO or PPC. I mean, you can start out doing something nominal. It's just hard to get traction. So I think that the key is, can you, and Ben, you just went through starting this new firm, can you get enough revenue from referral partners, from hustling, from getting cases other people don't want, if you're brand new, whatever it is, can you build up that base so that you have the revenue to spend money on marketing? And that number is higher in California. That's probably more of a Maine or general. I mean, everything's different in California. So what I would say is figuring out where you are, understanding that websites have a period where you're in a sandbox before you even have a chance of getting visibility. Your Google My Business, believe it or not, they don't call it the same thing, doesn't have an official name, but there's essentially a sandbox period where age of that Google My Business matters. So there are things that, you know, they always say the best time to plant a tree, was yesterday. The second best time is today. Like, getting a website up and starting to collect the age and the authority through sweat equity of asking people for links and finding ways to do content, whether it's yourself, your staff, or others, starting to take these steps to build something up. Because without that, your message is almost irrelevant. To me, if you can't be heard what difference does your message make? Yes, then once you have something that's a platform, then the question is, do you have a message that resonates and you can differentiate from the market? That's the next step. But I would just say that making sure that you take steps to understand what's there, and you need to live to fight through it, particularly on the plaintiff's bar, because you not only do you have to get the case, but you got to, you know, wait through settlement or verdict in order to get paid.
Seth, what data do lawyers need to track to determine if their marketing is successful or not? And we can kind of maybe leave it there, because that will be how we measure and hold ourselves accountable for the marketing efforts we undertake.
The more you can track, the better. And there's areas that you can track really well. And that, you know, I believe in things like CallRail to track your paid search to see what comes in. But as we mentioned before, stuff comes in from all different directions. So I think you try to figure out what's in the referral bucket and have to look at it top level. Because if you try to get too granular, most of us are not good enough to be able to figure that out. But if it's something direct like pay-per-click, it gives you an idea of what you're getting, because you can actually see these calls turned into clicks that turned into cases. You're probably have a slight benefit beyond that, because those ads at the top may have inspired somebody to click at the organic below, perhaps. So my point is, figure out what's going on. Try to figure out what your cost per case is. With pay-per-click, I always said, if you know you invested $1,000, which now you can't even do in California, it's not even a case, but if you invest X amount of money and it works, double it. If that works, double it. You know, those are, that's how I built my firm up. If it, you know, but there is not an easy answer. I would say track as much as you can. Don't bury your head in the sand, but it is a building process, and something like organic doesn't happen overnight. It's going to take time and it's going to build over time. So I encourage people to experiment and see what works for them in their market. But at the same time, if you try to get too granular in the tracking, you're going to drive yourself crazy, and you probably won't, you know, just throw your hands up and stop.
Well, Seth, this has been fantastic. We really appreciate your time today. It's been a wealth of knowledge for us and information. If our listeners want to hear more from you or contact you or find you, how do they go about doing that?
I geek out on this all the time. You ever have any questions about digital marketing, want to chat late night? I'm Seth at Blue Shark Digital, BlueSharkDigital.com. If you have questions about your site, we have a team that will throw it through like a battery of tests, send it back to you and say, hey, this is what's working, this is what's not. You know, my feeling is there are a lot of people that are just starting out. We're there to try to help them get there. So thank you so much, Ben and Raul, for having me on.
Thanks, Seth. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Seth. You were awesome.
All right, everybody, we'll call it a day. Look forward to seeing everybody back for another episode in 2 weeks. Everyone have a good week.
For more information about today's guests and the topics discussed on the show, please visit our website at www.elevate.net. That's ELAWBATE.net, where you'll find guest profiles and show notes, and you can continue the conversation by joining our Facebook group. And if you enjoyed today's show, we hope that you'll subscribe and consider giving us a 5-star review. So for now, keep on working to elevate your trial law practice, and we'll see you back again soon.